Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. We've got a great show in store for you today. I'm calling it New Friends Day because I met all three guests at this year's Jubilee Conference. They are new and very precious members of the Bomb Squad. First, let's thank our sponsor, Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school with locations around the globe. We've got a fantastic sweepstakes going on with Le Cordon Bleu. You could win culinary classes in Paris, London, or Ottawa, plus airfare, hotel, and a little spending money. Visit cherrybomb.com to enter. You'll see a little banner up there. Just click on it and follow the directions. Our first guest is Lani Halliday, and she's as glamorous and as creative as her movie star name implies. She's the force behind Brutus Bake Shop, the custom cake company based in Brooklyn. Lani wrote a fantastic essay about her life in which she said, "Becoming a pastry chef in my mid-30s is a second act, but not in the conventional sense. I didn't come from a glittering yet stifling career in publishing, PR, or fashion. I always have and will likely only ever work in the food and service industry. It's my first true love." Lani Halliday, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm really, really pleased to be here.
I'm so excited to get you here. And my main motivation in getting you here is because we just were never getting any time together.
No. Well, you're a busy person and I'm a busy person. And it you see each other out or you see each other around and you're like, let's hang out. And it doesn't really ever happen, does it?
But you were so awesome to participate in Jubilee this year. You did the snack break portion.
That was great.
And we paired you. Remind me, who'd we
pair? Jamstand.
Jamstand.
Those bad girls. Yeah, that was good.
The whole idea behind snack break, we kind of changed it a year ago to make it just more fun for everybody involved. So we pair two really cool, creative teams, essentially. Sometimes it's a single person like you or a team like Jamstand. To create a one-time-only snack for the guests.
Yeah, and it was super fun.
And you tell us what you created.
I made a cupcake. I made this gluten-free. Everything I do is gluten-free, and we can talk about why. But I did a cupcake. It was a really beautiful butter cake, and I made a buttercream that featured their raspberry jalapeno jam. They're this like super dynamic duo. They're like best friends and they started this crazy company together and they're doing super well. And I really thank them. They actually led me to my current workspace, but they were super fun. They're like super chic and sweet and gregarious. And we worked really well the whole way and we made a really beautiful, pretty, delicious item and it went very, very quickly and it was a really good time. Yeah, I thanks very much for tapping me up for that. That was like a highlight of the spring for me. It really was.
That cupcake went semi-viral. I saw the photo everywhere that day. It was so beautiful.
It was a thrill for me personally. I think this business can be very, very solitary in so many ways. And I have worked alone for a long time and, getting to connect with people is really like, that's what fortifies me in whether it's like a one-off event or, connecting with other makers or connecting with other creatives in whatever way I can, like that to me is super fortifying. And so to be able to do that event and be in that space, the space was beautiful. That hotel is so super beautiful. And the cathedral is like insane. And
the Highline Hotel, it used to be an Episcopal seminary.
Yes.
So everyone who walks into that space says either, oh my God, it's Hogwarts or it's Downton Abbey.
And it's definitely one of those places where, when I leave my house every day, I'm like, I'm so glad I live in New York. It's so beautiful here. It's such a wonderful, inspiring place. And I'm sure I've passed it 17,000 times in my life. But to be inside of there was just such a wonderful space. And I got to meet all these like insane, awesome people that I'm like, I nerd out on, at 1 o'clock in the morning when I'm in bed and I probably should be asleep and I have my phone in my face and I'm like, oh, Coco Cakeland, you are so amazing. Look at all your cute stuff. And I got to meet her and she's so wonderful. Lindsay, hey, what's up, girl? You know, it's really, really fun and exciting to be able to do those events, to be able to connect with people that you admire and respect their work. And I feel like New York is such an incredible place where women who respect the work of other women can come together. And I feel fortunate to be here, actually. So, yeah.
But you tapped into something that people don't necessarily realize about the whole food world is it can be very solitary.
Yes.
Because a lot of times you are working by yourself.
Yeah.
A lot of the women who are part of the Cherry Bomb Circle now, mm-hmm. you know, they're independent operators.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
freelancers.
Yeah.
They work at home. They work by themselves. They work in a kitchen somewhere
yeah.
on their own. And that's really been... definitely for me, the most fulfilling part of Cherry Bomb
yeah.
is just getting to meet with all these people and connect with all these people. And, you know, the whole idea really came from when I started a restaurant with my then boyfriend, and it was so isolating.
Yeah.
And even though you've got like maybe hundreds of people coming into your place, or like
yeah.
in your case, you know, you're dealing with tons of clients all the time.
Yeah.
There is just something that can be kind of isolating.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I tell people it's like, you know, and this is not a complaint, but it's like it's 90% schlepping, and it's, which is great for, you know, stress relief because you're physically getting all of it out. But yeah, you know, for me, I got so into this show personally. Like, I'm actually like a big fan. I was renting space from this super awesome catering company who allowed me to rent space from them and have a workspace so I could grow my business. And I would just literally like be in the basement at night by myself because the kitchen's in the basement. And I would just be alone with like my little Bluetooth speaker and just put on, you know, like archived episodes. And it really just it made me feel, I have such a rich fantasy life. And it made me feel like I had this like community around me, and like, I was like, yes, girl. Like, I would talk to myself. I'm known for talking to myself, and I would be like, yes, girl, Mimi Sheridan. Yeah, girl. You tell me about this. Ooh, 1,000 things I need to eat before I die. Ooh, that sounds good. You know, and I would literally, you know, and, like the porters would come in and be like, are you okay? And I would just be like, yeah, I'm totally fine. I'm working. Just leave me alone. I'm totally fine. You know, and it really became this thing for me where I felt like I wasn't so alone. And it was just, it helped me in a way feel like I was on the right path, because I was like doing my work and doing the things that I wanted to do. But it was like I had this almost like a feedback in a way where I was like, yeah, I'm doing my thing and I'm listening to this thing that I love and I'm going to be on there one day. I'm going to get there. This is where I'm going. So,
and here you are.
I know it's.
So let's take it back
exciting.
Even further.
Okay.
How did you wind up in the food world?
Well, I've always worked in food. I mean, my mom is Italian American, and food was like so huge when I was growing up. And I lived in Hawaii until I was 10.
Wait, that's crazy. Okay. So earlier today I had to guest host Tech Bites
yeah.
with Jennifer Liuzzi, and she grew up in Hawaii.
Oh, it's fantastic place to be a child. You have, I mean, I did. I had so much physical freedom. Like, I could go, my whole town was essentially like a cul-de-sac. And I could pretty much just, my whole entire town was like surrounded, like bordered by beaches and then like sugarcane fields. And I could just pretty much go anywhere my little legs could pedal. I could just go. I mean, I wasn't like allowed to, but I just did because there was nowhere really to go and get lost. And I would go to this one like place we weren't really supposed to go to, where all the like hippie burnouts had their tents and they would sleep on the beach. And there was like this abandoned chicken farm. And I would cycle over there when I was feeling like I needed a little excitement, you know, because it was a very unusual place. But so where I lived, where I grew up in Hawaii, my parents were super into going to church. And there was this little church near where we lived. And I loved church when I was a kid because there was singing, lots of singing. I sang a lot. I sang in the church choir. And there was always food after. And Hawaii is such a multicultural place. And there was always, like, there was, like, Filipino food and Japanese food and, you know, like, Italian food. And there was all of these food cultures sort of coming together every single week with, like, potluck. And you would just eat all of these things that you didn't really have familiarity with, but then they just were part of, you know, what you got to have. And that, to me, like, that's where it started. And my mom was always cooking stuff. My mom's, like, Italian-American from Brooklyn, but she'd be like, oh, do you want some lumpia? Like, I'll just make that for you. I'd be like, yes, I do. And my dad's from the South, and my dad is an incredible cook and, you know, a baker also, and he would make, like, crazy, like, fried chicken and, you know, anything. And so definitely, like, it started there. And I was a terrible cook growing up, like, terrible. Like, I almost burnt our house down trying to fry an egg in a cake pan once when I was 13. And I literally, there were, like, flames up to the ceiling, and my mom was across the street at the neighbor's house, and I, like, just abandoned it and, like, ran across the street and was like, no. No, and, you know, my siblings would laugh at me, and my sister, who's, like, 4 years younger, she'd cook for me. And but I got it together. Like, I started my first job was working in this, like, local pizza chain when I was 16, and that was, like, my first job ever. And I worked there for a long time, and I would just make pizza and work with people that I was in high school, and I would work with people that I would never have hung out with in high school, which was a really interesting experience for me. And then I just sort of, I worked there. I worked at like a classic American drive-in burger joint when I was like 18. And then I started baking when I was 19. I was working in this like big natural foods grocery store that's sort of in Portland, Oregon, where I sort of spent my teenage years. There was this little chain called Nature's, and they had, the one I worked in had an organic scratch bed bakery, and the guy who was the baker, like, I think I started as like a cart wrangler, and he tapped me. He's like, girl, you want to learn how to bake bread? And I was like, oh, I do. That sounds amazing. And he taught me, I mean, we would make like ciabatta and like beautiful sourdoughs. And I got so high on this idea that like I could go to a place before the sun got up and make all this like insanely beautiful stuff to eat with my hands that like didn't exist, just conjure it up during the morning, and people would come in and they would buy all this stuff, and they would be like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm so, like, we would make like garlic parmesan loaves with like whole cloves of garlic in it, and people would come in and they would lose their minds, and then at the end of the day it would all be gone. And then we would just come back and do it again the next day. And I worked with this woman who was like a buddy, and we would just have laughs, and we would talk about music and men and what we were going to do in our lives. And I couldn't conceive of anything that was like more exciting than that when I was, you know, 19.
And then what came next?
Then I worked in this super rad restaurant, bar, music venue. Like, the food wasn't amazing or anything, but it was this new place. It's called the Doug Fir. It's still there. It's in Portland, Oregon. It's probably the best music venue of that size on the West Coast, or maybe even in the country. It's like a 300-person music venue. And I worked in the restaurant. I worked as a cocktailer, and I worked in the booking department. And, you know, it was the buzz of working in that environment is like not comparable to anything else. Like,
so what era, musical era, are we talking about?
Maybe say like Phoenix when they were playing for 150 people, or like, you know, who put Sharon Jones played there too.
Oh, the late Sharon Jones.
Oh, she's such a treasure. She played there. I sang on stage with her. You know, I grew up in Portland, and music was a huge, huge part of life there. You know, I was going to shows from the time I was like 13 years old, and Portland at that time, I know that it still does now, but it had such a robust music scene that had all ages clubs. You know, there's a guy, Todd P, he's got music venues here, and he ran this music venue that I would go to when I was a teenager. That was I think it sat 40 people, standing room only, and it was in some neighborhood. And
do you remember some of the bands you saw
then at that little mm-hmm. tiny place? Mm-hmm. It was a lot of hardcore stuff. I mean, there was a band called Backside Disaster that was a terrible hardcore band, which sounds like, you know, pooping your pants. But I think it's like a skateboard trick, right? So, and I had a boyfriend who was in there. And no, I remember it being really sweaty. I remember loading in. I remember going to the like comfort food restaurant next door after, but not this called the Delta Cafe, which I think is still there, but I'm not quite sure.
All right, so you slipped in there that you sang on stage with Sharon Jones.
Yeah, it's
now,
like
Sharon Jones, when she was alive, was in possession of one of the most amazing voices.
Yeah,
so
it
takes a lot of chutzpah to jump on stage and perform with Sharon Jones.
I mean, it was for one song, and it literally, like, that was kind of how I did it with Joan Jett too when I was like 19. That was like my style. Like, I was super into going to shows and just like
you just jump on stage
mind.
And
yeah, like I, you know.
You kind of get tackled by security for
no,
things like that.
No, not in Portland, not no. at that time. I mean, at the end of the show, Sharon Jones, it was just like, come up, girl. Like, let's do this. And I didn't know about Sharon Jones. Like, it was, I just didn't know about her. This friend of mine who also worked in the bar, he was like, oh, he turned me on to all this music. He's super into music. And he was like, do you know Sharon Jones? She's playing, I think it must have been like a Tuesday. I don't know. Like, and I just remember he was like, listen, it doesn't matter that you don't know her music. You really need to come to the show tonight. Like, when you finish, go downstairs, because it's, you know, restaurant and bar upstairs, and then the venue is like down in the basement. And it was this really weird spot. It was great. Like, I would go to weird punk shows. It used to be a Chinese restaurant. It's been there since the 60s, the building. And it used to be the Chinese food restaurant. And they would have punk shows in the basement. But you'd have to go in and go through the kitchen and down the back staircase and go and, like, see shows down where the, like, legitimate venue is now. And anyway, this guy, Zach, he was just like, no, you have to make time for this. And I was so glad I did. And it was a really great night. But, yeah, it was.
And what did you sing with our spirit animal, Joan Jett? What song?
Well, I sang "Do You Want to Touch," which, you know, when you're 19, or I don't even, maybe I was a little bit older than that. I must have been, but it's that time truly is a bit of a blur for reasons I won't necessarily say now.
Okay, well, we're gonna fast forward because we need to talk about Brutus Bake Shop.
Okay.
I don't want to run out of time and let's not plug your awesome business.
So Brutus Bake Shop is my current creative outlet. It's I have such a good time feeling like it's the end of the world every week.
Wait, you have to explain what that means.
So the thing about it is, you know, I have so much anxiety. And I, you know, a friend of mine who is this incredible photographer, we were having this conversation once, and I was like, dude, you know, I do all these things, I make all these cakes, and I'm never, never happy. And he's like, it's because you're an artist, and artists are never happy with their work, and it's part of it, and you just have to, like, accept it and move on. And
because your cakes are not simple.
They're not simple, and they're so fun, and they really are. You know, the woman that I studied under at pastry school, one of the people I interned with, she taught me this technique, and I've just really run with it. And it's really fun, and it's really different, and it's really sort of catches people out because they don't really understand what it is. And but I get to create. And but the thing is,
wait, what's the technique?
Oh, sorry. So it's a very classic, like, old school technique. It's it's called a jacquard sponge. It's a very, very thin flat cake that you bake, like, on a sheet tray. And I use this stuff called tuile paste, which is just like equal parts of egg whites and sugar and melted butter and flour. And you kind of make a paste, and it makes a paint, and you can color it. And then you can do sort of designs on, like, say, a flat sill pat. And then you freeze that. And then you pour this, like, very thin sponge over the top, and you sort of bake in your design. And it's very much, it's all surface design. And then I use a mold, and I sort of cut strips, and I lay the cake into the mold, and then fill it up with, like, delicious say white chocolate mousse for somebody who might like that sort of thing.
We need to talk about that in a second. But so it's almost like I envision like printmaking, like making old posters.
It's not unlike that. It is. And I can do like freehand things. I use stencils. I do custom stencils. There's a lot. I really like it because you don't, like a lot of cake decorators that I know are so technically proficient with like making really beautiful sugar flowers or like piping buttercream roses. And for me, I don't nest, like I can do that stuff. I'm pretty good, but like, I'm not the best. And the place where I feel like I have the most proficiency in my technique is being able to like work with this medium that's very much like painting, that's super forgiving. I can clean things up. If it's not working, I can wipe it away like oil paint and kind of just start again. And you're also not like panicking at the last minute because you've, you know, prepared this thing and you can see if it's good or if it's not. And I mean, I feel really lucky to have happened upon the technique, to be honest. So, yeah.
So you made me, we have to talk about this, the most beautiful birthday cake.
You.
It was just mind blowing.
Thank you.
And when the girls brought it to, I was working at InStyle temporarily at the time. I was a maternity leave fill-in.
Yeah.
And they brought in the cake and the whole office was just mesmerized by this cake. So
that's what I hope for.
I'm going to put a picture of it on my Instagram so everyone can see what we're talking about. But you describe it to us and what went into the making of that cake.
That was a super fun cake. I mean, they're all super fun cakes to make. I feel really lucky to do what I do. It's really, really fun. But, so basically that was a custom stencil cake. So basically, you guys reached out, Donna reached out and, she was like, "Hey, you want to do this thing?" I was like, "Hell yes, I want to do this thing." And I just kind of had a little think and I made this sort of like custom repeat pattern cherry stencil and I had to like go and like, I drew the stencil, I sort of drew the cherries and then I cut them all out by hand on this big piece of sort of plastic that I use. And I cut it all out by hand and then I made all my paint and I painted it all on this. It's difficult to describe. I think the photograph will be super helpful, but I just kind of, I sort of had to freehand it and I used a stencil and baked this design into this cake. And then I laid it in a mold and I filled it with like white chocolate mousse.
Because I do like white chocolate. Yeah. Everyone makes fun of me for it.
No, I like white chocolate. I think that not all white chocolate's created equal. And it is also a product that can go rancid quite easily because it's just fat.
What?
Yeah.
It's just fat. Nobody told me that.
Well, that's why you love it so
Surprise.
Much because it's delicious. But yeah, I really like white chocolate. And yeah, it was cake and mousse and the beautiful sponge on the outside and then the little like glittery cherries on top, which was super fun to
make
too.
Did. Was that based on the Piers Atkinson cherry headpiece? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, but it was not.
There was that
literally
British, hat maker.
Yeah.
And he's kind of famous now because he created this like cherry fascinator thing.
No, it was just, I kind of just wanted it to go with the repeating cherry pattern and just kind of like, it was pretty literal. I mean.
You also do these fantastic snake cakes. Can we talk about the snake cakes?
That actually, you know.
They literally look like
snakes.
Yeah.
So that came from
albino snakes. Like I've seen the white one.
Yeah.
That you do.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. This is the white one. So that actually came from this incredibly talented woman, named Caroline Polachek. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. She is a musician and a singer and she was in a band called Chairlift and she got married, 2 years ago, I think now it is. And she, her sister who was coordinating and planning reached out and was like, "Hey, can you do this thing?" And I was like, "Yes, I can. That sounds amazing." And that again was just that was funny that actually came to me when I had started a catering company with these other women and that went tits up. It was a bad scene. We imploded. We imploded as a business and we were all friends and it sucked because we had this like friend breakup over it, which we're all buddies again. Like we are all friends again. It took some time. There were a lot of feelings. And it was this thing that sort of came to us. And I was like, oh, like our is the execution of this thing going to happen? Like, yes, it is the short answer. Like, there's no other option. But, like, you know, when you have something like that happen, you're sort of like your attention's divided, and you know, there's a freak out that happens. You know, there was a freak out that happened, and you know, I just sort of like had to get it together, and I produced it, and I had to like rent special space because it was massive. I mean, I think the thing was like 4 or 5 feet long, and bless the lovely people at She Wolf Bakery. I'm a big fan of cold calling or cold emailing people. Like, I'm the biggest proponent of cold emailing. I literally was just like, hey, so I'm a baker. I'm a completely legitimate person. Can I please just like maybe rent some space for you from this like one-off thing? Maybe, you know, some people I know, I don't know. That's maybe I can drum up a reference, but like, I really did, like, I knew that I worked at Oven Leaf for a while. And I knew that they had this connection, and I was like, I know they have this massive walk-in, they have a massive freezer, and I needed space. Like, most walk-in freezers or fridges, like, do not have the space. And to produce this thing, I needed this huge space. This is a super long cake. And they graciously were like, yeah, totally. So, which is this fantastic thing about the New York City food scene. Like, people, you just reach out. I mean, that's how I got my space. I rented from this fantastic woman-owned catering company, and I literally just, like, cold emailed through their contact info thing on their website. I was like, hey, what's up, buddies? I live in the neighborhood. Can I just, like, rent some space for you? And she was like, come over, looked me in the eyes, and was like, who do you know that I know? And I was like, well, I know Agatha and Aaron over at Ovenly. I used to work there. And they're like, she's like, how did you leave? Was it good or was it bad? And I was like, it was good. And she was like, fine, you can move in next month. And I was like, what? That's great. And I feel like that, like, so much of that happens here. And so, you know, I always give people the advice of like, cold call anyone and everyone. Like, I'm a huge fan of just cold calling, cold emailing, being like, hey, buddy.
So I'm surprised that wasn't the one and only sneak cake.
No, so now people you do. Like it. Like, no, people like it. People order that. I do littler ones. Like, so that was a massive one, and I will do one that's half that size now.
What are they frosted with?
Just American buttercream.
And what's on the inside?
Well, whatever you want. I mean, the cake I did for that wedding was a gingerbread cake. That was like her thing. That's what she wanted. And it was super beautiful, and it turned out really well. And I mean, everyone was super happy with it, which is like all that any maker wants, like your client to be like super happy. And she was. And that was a gingerbread one, but it can be anything. It can be anything you want. It can be red velvet. It can be, I mean, not something super delicate because it needs a little bit of fortitude to be able to kind of like stand up. But yeah, I do ones that are like about maybe like 2 feet long or 18 inches. Like, I do those for birthdays. People like them. People are super into them. I mean, they're fun.
So Brutus is all custom.
Well,
you have a shop? I saw on your Instagram you were at a market.
Yes. So the cake thing's been this like super crazy awesome blessing. Like, it's really grown word of mouth. Like, I'm not a marketer. I don't know how to build a brand per se. Like, I ask people. I ask all my friends. Like, I'm super just like, hey buddy, can you help me? I don't know what I'm doing. Please advise. Which I'm a big proponent of, reaching out to your community and taking support and letting people support you. Like, when you, I think as a New Yorker, like, you're very, very hyper aware of like infringing on other people and like giving people their space and not imposing on your friends and what they do. And, you know, I've really, really with this project, like, really pushed myself to just be like, no, I need your help. And I'm really open to taking your help. And so I have grown this thing, and I did the cakes for super, super long. And I love the cakes. I still do the cakes. The cakes are a thing that I do for sure. But the cakes have been this like freelance thing. And, you know, I've been still like working in restaurants and like doing all this other stuff, like one-off things. My friend owns a custom cake shop too. And like, I'll go and like make buttercream for her for like a day and, you know, just do all these like sort of one-off things. And I was like, you know what? Like, I need to like get some momentum with this, and I really need to get some traction, and like, what are my goals? Like, I have something here that I've created. Like, what am I going to do with this, and how can I build it into something that's sustainable and pays me money? And because I, you know, we can talk about money, but that's a totally different conversation. You know, that's something that I can grow into, something that, you know, is like a legacy, or just is something that I can use as a vehicle to sort of fulfill these other things that I want to see happen in my community, you know? So
what markets are you at right
now?
I'm
doing McGolrick Park on Sundays. And I do Dumbo on Wednesdays, Pearl Triangle Park. And I'm going to be doing those every single week through November. So please come and see me. Myself and my buddy Jenny are doing that. And we are the friendliest people. And we do lots of really good samples. And all of our stuff's like kick ass. So you want to eat everything.
What are some of the things we can come and buy?
Well, for the next couple of weeks, while strawberry and rhubarb are in season, I'm doing strawberry rhubarb ham pies. I do this gorgeous brioche. I'll do that on Sundays. I won't do that on Wednesdays, because the Wednesday thing is like people having lunch. So I'll do savory ham pies, fruit, seasonal rotating, whatever I can get at the farmer's market. On Wednesdays, and then like probably like cookies. So that's like lunchy people, like come on down for your snacks. There's like outdoor seating. It's super beautiful. It's open air. There's lots of like young and old and dog and lots of people and energy all coming together, having their lunch, tourists, residents, etc. All coming together and sort of sitting and eating in this very like public space. And it's like this cute little piazza situation under the Manhattan Bridge. And that's really great and fun. And then there's McGolrick, which is like super chill. Like everyone's just strolling and nice. And my buddy Jenny, who does the markets with me, you know, we met working in a restaurant. I hired her to work as a server for me, and we work together and we really, really dig each other. And I asked her to do this with me, and she's like, yeah, I'll totally do it with you. And then Sunday, the very first one we did was Sunday. And she was like, dude, everyone is so nice. She's like, it's not like working in a restaurant. Everyone is so nice. She's like, everyone's happy to be here. Everyone's super chill. Everyone's so nice. And don't get me wrong, I love restaurants. I love working in restaurants. I love the energy, front of house, back of house, all of it. I like some of my most treasured work experiences have happened in restaurant settings. But, you know, working as a server in New York City, you know, you see all kinds. And she noted that the farmer's market had a different vibe than the place.
I'm happy to hear
together.
That.
Yeah.
We should do a round table one day on servers. That's it's
all
such
my server
a particular
friends.
Thing.
I tell them to write it down. That's my advice for server. I'm like, you could have a book deal. Like, write it down, write it down. There's so much craziness that happens when you're a server. And I think it's so like, to me, I was a server for a long time. To me, being a server is like such a gift, because you get to practice like your poker face. You know, I remember this woman. This is like legendary. She asked me for a lighter spoon. She's having soup. She asked me for a lighter spoon because her spoon was too heavy. And I was like, the in that moment, like I was like, whoa, like this is, I'm on candid camera. Like, and just to, you know, and I'm like, I really, really, I like to treat people with compassion and empathy. And I truly try like not to judge people. And that really like challenged me in that moment. And I was like, cause I want to be like, what? You are lying. Like, you don't really want a lighter spoon. Like, I thought she was kind of joking. And I was like, it was a moment where I really had to like, not
right. You never know. You don't know what's going on in her brain.
Yeah.
You don't know, is she in some weird kind of pain?
Yeah.
You know, and it's the hospitality industry.
Yeah. And you
want to make
people
happy.
You got to dig in and, you know, and I love, you know, it's funny. I worked for Erin McKenna when I first moved to New York, who.
One of our favorites.
Girl, that she is a
baby
national treasure. You know, like, I don't know what hype exists out in the world about this woman, but it's all true. Like, she is the funniest, most generously spirited person. Like, she, I don't think I worked for her and she talked trash on anyone. She's loves puns. She is so kind and happy all the time and so hardworking and really just like somebody I feel really, really blessed to have worked for and with. And like, I remember reading or talking to her about like working in restaurants and like feeling really, really weird about like just loving being a server, because I identified with that so much. I was like, dude, I love it too. I love people. I love talking to people. I love food. I love just like serving people. I really, truly do. And is it weird? Is it weird? No, it's not weird. I love it. And yeah, I guess I've had, you know, good and bad experiences working, as everyone has in life. And yeah, I feel lucky that at the end of the night, I can sit with all my coworkers and drink wine, I guess. Because not every industry looks kindly upon that. I don't think everyone can do that. So I feel lucky.
Lonnie, I hate to cut this short, but we have to end it here. For those who want more of Lonnie, she wrote such a remarkable essay that's online. I don't know if it's part of your blog or I forget how I found it.
Yeah, it's on my website. It's on my website. You can access it through there. I have a blog on there. I think it's got two posts, but that's one of them.
That makes it a blog, I guess. Yeah. But it is so honest about success and failure in life and you being a mom and a stay-at-home mom. And then, I mean, you really, it's a fantastic essay.
Thank
and
you.
If you want to know a little bit more about Lonnie, you should check it out. You'll be back on the show soon. I know that.
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being part of the Bomb Squad now.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
I'm dead pleased. Thanks.
We are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with the founders of Jane's Beard.
Yes.
Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle de Stael. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, Le Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've ever dreamed of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to start living that dream. Check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world, or add a short vacation or a weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, online registration, and to discover which school is best for you. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu. Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. Our next guests are the founders of Jane's Beard. You heard that right. Not James Beard, but Jane's Beard. Jane's Beard is an underground dining club for lesbian and queer women in New York City, founded by Elena McMillan and Sabrina Chen. Elena comes from the food startup world, and Sabrina works in cancer research, designing systems to manage and analyze scientific data. Elena and Sabrina, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Elena, you look scared.
I am a little scared.
Scoot your chair up a little.
Okay.
We're going to get you comfortable in here.
Cool.
So I'm super psyched to have you both on the show. I discovered, like all things today, I discovered you through Instagram. You're popping up on my feed or commenting on our posts or something. I forget how I first learned of you guys. And then you came to Jubilee. And I was so grateful that you introduced yourselves.
We actually didn't know that you knew about us before Jubilee. That's really awesome.
So you guys just came up and said hi, and we took a picture, and then we had dinner a while later because I was so curious about what you two were up to, and I thought it was so awesome, and here you are.
Yeah.
So thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Is this your first radio interview as Jane's Beard?
It definitely is.
Yes.
The look of terror still hasn't left my face.
It's easy. And you have you have your own video person in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm impressed how you guys roll. You roll with photographers and videographers and you guys are badass.
Conversation starter.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So, all right, let's just get down to it. What, in your words, what is Jane's Beard? Sabrina, let's start with you.
Yeah. We produce culinary events for queer and lesbian women, and that means that we collaborate with chefs, bartenders, really talented up-and-coming chefs who happen to be queer, usually female. We do everything from pop-up seated meals and barbecues to cocktail events, and we still have plenty of ideas ahead of us. But we curate a space that we think would be a fun place to really have conversation and mingle and really be able to bond over the food and have a conversation and get beyond maybe the surface level conversation.
So Sabrina, why was there a need for an organization like Jane's Beard? Oh, wait, I said Sabrina. Look, I looked at Elena. See, I'm making sure you two are paying attention.
We're merging. Yeah.
Okay. Elena, why was there a need for an organization like this?
So there's a need for something like this because we go to a lot of networking events. We go to a lot of events just in general. And we wanted to create something that we ourselves would want to go to. That being, you know, somewhere, a place where you can have a conversation that's not too loud, something that's curated around food. We're huge foodies, if you will. So just wanted to create a space that was safe. Around something that we truly love, food and cocktails.
So you two took me to this restaurant I had never heard of.
Karatsu.
Which is behind Walters.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In Fort Greene. And you two did something that was, I mean, I liked you when I met you, but you two did something that was so classy that it's burned on my brain now. So you took me there. What's the chef's name again? You're friends with her.
Yael Elina.
And she was not there, but I guess her sous chef who was there that night?
So both of them were there. I think Yael had just walked around the corner.
Oh, that was it. Yeah. Okay. But you two brought a present for the chef.
Yeah.
What was the present again?
It was a Kings County James bourbon.
Yeah.
And why did you bring a present for the chef?
So this is actually something we can't fully take credit for bringing that gift. This is something that we learned from one of our friends and also a chef who's been at Jane's Beard, Kelly Jones. She we all went out to dinner and, you know, at this really amazing restaurant. And she knew the pastry chef there. And when, you know, kind of the dinner ended and we got all of these amazing desserts and all of a sudden Kelly's wife left and came back with this really great bottle of bourbon to present to her friend. We're like, why did you do that? And it was just kind of like the sort of industry standard thank you to say thank you so much for bringing out, you know, all of this amazing, you know, all of these amazing desserts. As opposed to, say, tipping extra on the bill or something like that.
Because that's what I do. I always tip extra.
Same. We thought the same thing.
Yeah, we thought the same thing.
And that goes to the staff, which is great. Yeah. But for some reason, it never crossed my mind to bring a present for the chef. And I just thought that was such a, like, really kind, classy move on your part.
Thank you.
So everyone listening, when you go out to eat, no, I'm kidding. You don't always have to bring a present for the chef. But it really is nice. And I think for people who love food and want to take things to the next level relationship wise or whatever, it's just such a kind thing, and it doesn't have to be that elaborate. But I think that's what really struck me about the two of you. You're doing this really unique thing, but at the same time you came to it because you've so much respect for the food world and for these chefs, and you really came at it as food enthusiasts.
Yeah, we've never worked in the food industry before. We've never done anything front of house, back of house. But we're just really humbled by the restaurant industry. We're the type of people that when we enter a restaurant, we immediately want to go sit up at the bar. We want to talk to the bartenders. If the food is, like, you know, exceptionally good, just for any time, we love meeting the chef and just saying thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So tell us about some of the events that you've done. What I mean, I know you haven't done a million of them yet, but tell us about one of them. Walk us through it.
Yeah. So we've done an event where it was a seated plated meal. We start off with a cocktail hour. Make sure that everyone can mingle and meet, introduce themselves to each other. If they don't know each other, we're happy to introduce people. And then
you two are the cruise directors for the evening, more or less.
Between putting out fires.
All the operations.
Yeah. And so, and then it's followed by a seated meal where we try to break it up usually halfway through just to allow people to go get another drink or maybe they want to talk to someone else that was sitting across the table. Just provide breakout points and breakout opportunities so that people can really meet and mingle and have an excuse to walk across the room and chat.
And what's the size of your events generally? Does it vary wildly or are these pretty intimate events?
Yeah, we like to think that they're intimate. They've ranged from 20 to 60 people.
Yeah, our last event was 60 people.
Yeah.
A barbecue on a rooftop in Queens.
Fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
And you do have a spirit animal chef. Can we take a moment to talk about your spirit animal chef?
I mean, just us, like, right now. From the very first event, we've always had a picture of Kristen Kish at our event. And so our hope is that one day we can sort of substitute the picture for Kristen to actually be at our event.
And we to put things out in the universe.
Hey, yeah.
The book, The Secret.
That's how stuff happens. And I know there might be a Kristen thing in the works. Kristen Kish, as we all know, Cherry Bomb cover girl, Top Chef winner, awesome human being. She has a cookbook coming out in the fall that we're all super excited about.
Can't wait for it.
Yeah, cannot wait. Yeah.
As everyone knows, the Cherry Bomb cookbook is coming out around the same time, but I'm super excited. It's so funny. It's like our cookbook's coming out, but I'm like almost even more excited about, you know, my friends' cookbooks that are coming out. And Kristen's a really serious chef.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you guys made the recipes that are in the Cherry Bomb issue with Kristen, but they're not easy. They're kind of hardcore. So I'm curious to see like what direction, because she doesn't have a restaurant.
Right.
You know, she worked for the great Barbara Lynch in Boston. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see what direction Kristen's cookbook takes, because I don't know that the world knows yet what is Kristen Kish cuisine. That's a tongue twister. Ready? Say it with me.
Kristen Kish cuisine.
There we go. On a more serious note, I think this is a good opportunity to talk about the word queer and the fact that you use the word queer in the description mm-hmm. of what Jane's Beard is, because I think it's a misunderstood word. Everybody knows what lesbian means, mm-hmm. but I don't think everybody, especially of a certain generation, knows what the word queer means. So why did you decide to use that word and just take a moment to talk us through that?
Yeah, that's a big question.
I'm throwing some really heavy, hard questions at you two for your first radio show. But don't just talk from the heart, you know.
I mean, so when we did our very first sort of event, like before Jane's Beard was a thing, we just kind of wanted to trial it out. We were thinking about people that we wanted to come to this sort of unofficial Jane's Beard. Serena had a couple people, I had a couple people, and one of the people that I wanted to bring was a really good friend of mine. We used to work together, and she is queer and married to a man. And so I wanted to make sure that she felt included. She came up to me afterwards and said, you know, thank you so much for inviting me to this event. You kind of get separated into like two different categories, right? Straight, gay, lesbian, whatever term that you'd like to use. And she wanted to, she was really excited to be there. Didn't have to explain herself in any way, shape, or form. So we wanted to make sure to be inclusive.
Sabrina, how about you?
Yeah, I agree. That was the main point, is to make sure that we are inclusive. And it's not easy. We didn't want to create categories and then say it's just for women or lesbians. People identify in many different ways. So, I think maybe the vocabulary hasn't caught up. You know, we don't know how to explain it yet. There's a good article in Slate, actually, that addressed it. So that might be
a place to check that out. Direct people to that article. Because I struggle with that with Cherry Bomb, too, sometimes, because I know there are some chefs in our community who don't necessarily identify as male or female anymore. And you never want to feel like you've created this thing that is not welcoming to everybody. You know, yet at the same time, like, you can't be everything to everybody, and you know, you pick your lane. So I was just curious about that from your perspective. Okay, before we run out of time, how does somebody find out about your events? What's the process for being part of Jane's Beard?
Yeah, so the easiest way is to go to our Instagram. It's at Jane's Beard, JaynesBeard. And there's a link in the bio. Sign up and you'll start receiving invitations to our events. And also, we like to grow organically. We don't actually advertise. So this is really all referral-based, if possible. So we love meeting a friend of a friend, and it's a thrill to grow that way.
When's your next event?
Our next event is next Thursday, June 15th. It's a cocktail party, cocktail and desserts. And actually, the desserts are going to be from Butter and Scotch.
Oh, yeah. Love them.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
They're so great. Yeah.
Is it sold out yet? Can people still get
we'll
tickets to that?
We'll have to check our phones after we get on done, but we're close to selling out.
Yeah, right before we stepped in, there's still tickets left.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so sign up fast. And then I'm sure you'll have some great events over the summer, too.
Definitely.
Right?
We've got some amazing chefs that we're really excited to work with, and bartenders that we're really excited to work with. So cannot wait.
Right. Awesome. Awesome. We have to talk about the name, Jane's Beard. It's brilliant. That's what first caught my eye. I didn't even know what the hell you guys were, but I was like, Jane's Beard, I want to know more about that. Well, we should note you are not affiliated with James Beard in any way, shape, or form.
We are not.
No.
But why the name?
Yeah. You know, before our first event, people kept on asking, what are you called? What are you called? What's your name? And we were already thinking. And I think we spent months already trying to think of a name. And we really feel we're at the intersection of culinary and queer. And you know, the brainstorming sessions were pretty funny because we'd throw out things having to do with tacos or box or whatnot. And it was just like, this is not appropriate. We want to keep it classy if possible. But
keep
still,
it classy. It's always good
always.
Advice.
Still,
but I think, you know, Alina said, what's going on with James Beard? You know, the great James Beard. And we looked him up, and we realized actually he was gay, and we didn't know that. We thought it would be funny to do a play and say, how about Jane? And then the next day just hit us, how about Jane's? And we could also do a play off of the gay beard. So,
yeah.
Well, it's brilliant. Yeah. Well, you two already know this. I just think you're both fantastic, and I think Jane's Beard is just going to get bigger and bigger. And again, I just love that you come at it from such a place of respect for people in the culinary world.
Thank you. So, and the feeling is mutual to you.
Aww. Yes, we're huge fans.
Thanks. And you two will be back. It's so funny. It's like, Lonnie was so great. You two are so great. I'm like bummed that, you know, the interviews couldn't be longer, but you two will be back. Lonnie will be back, and lucky us, we all get to have lunch afterward. So little Roberta's pizza for all of us. So that is it for today's show. Radio Cherry Bomb was engineered by the one and only Dave Tatasciore. Thank you, Dave. Thank you to Le Cordon Bleu for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. Don't forget, we have a great Le Cordon Bleu sweepstakes going on right now. To enter, visit cherrybomb.com and click on the banner. You could win a trip to Paris, London, or Ottawa, plus culinary classes and spending money. The new issue of Cherry Bomb is out right now. We've got Martha Stewart on the cover. Check with your favorite indie bookstore, indie newsstand, or cherrybomb.com to get a copy. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
Chaplin, and I'm a chef and cookbook author. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Yung Kwan. And why? Because she is an absolute inspiration to cooking naturally with foods grown locally.